Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. Today, I have a special guest because he's one of my dear friends, so it's always super fun to chat with him. We are going to talk about something kind of a little bit different, but of course, all goes around Lyme disease and how something as simple as what we're going to discuss can help somebody that's out there battling this horrible disease that I talk about all the time. So I'm super excited to welcome him back. Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Harmon.
It's always great to talk to you.
Much fun when we get outside of
the... How many years have we known each other now? Five?
It's getting pretty close to that. Pretty close to that. So, and it's also fun because we live in the same little neighborhood. So I get to have you live in the studio versus on Zoom.
And my wife likes you too, so...
I mean, what's not to like, right?
Exactly.
I mean, come on. I just adore you and I adore Carla. It's like you guys are fantastic.
We have a lot of fun together.
We sure do. We know how to work and have fun, right?
Yes.
Well, I appreciate your time and you coming back to talk about all about GHK copper peptides. So people are probably wondering what that is. Well, first, I just want to share a little bit about why I'm... We all know I'm super passionate about Lyme disease, right? But why I'm passionate about learning and sharing this whole thing about peptides, what are they, right? So for those of you who may or may not know, my Lyme journey was 13 years long. And of course, it was a horrible battle. I reached remission, but I still had problems. I'm like, how do I get Lyme out of me? But I still have these residual issues. Well, I think that happens because we go so many years of just Lyme eating away at our bodies. And a lot of times we don't even know it's Lyme. So there's not much we can do about it. So after I reached remission, I would say probably my biggest debilitating issue was chronic pain. And my pain after I went through the whole gist of chronic Lyme was in my lower back and my hips. Well, my hips apparently, because they were bone on bone, the doctor said that the spirochetes just ate away my hips for years. So unfortunately, I was still on very strong opioids. I got regular steroid injections in my back to try to alleviate some of the pain, but it was very much life-altering. Like I was grateful because I knew my name, I could drive and all these things because I got rid of my Lyme, but I still had this life-altering, you know, chronic pain situation. So I had that. I had some GI issues. I still dealt with anxiety. And I want to cautiously say some fatigue because Lyme fatigue is a whole nother level of any type of fatigue you could ever imagine. And so I wasn't fatigued every day. But if I was super busy for days on end, I would need a total down day to kind of recoup my body. So that type of fatigue. I still had a lot of inflammation, some brain fog, overstimulation, food sensitivities. My blood work was still kind of all over the map. But again, super grateful I had my life back. So what we're about to talk about, elevating our own GHK copper peptide, is truly what gave me my life back. So all of the symptoms I just discussed after I got in remission from Lyme disease are all now completely reversed. I have zero symptoms, all due to this wonderful peptide we're going to talk about. So that's why I'm bringing this into our Lyme podcast. So what are we going to talk about? Oh my gosh, I get so excited, right? Like, where do we start? What do we do?
Well, that's a good question.
And I know that you broke it down for us pretty easy because you wrote a book all about it.
I did. It's called How to Reverse Aging, A Comprehensive Guide to Copper Peptides. It's all the things that nobody knows about copper peptides, broken down into 18 chapters. So the book is based on all of the research that has been done since 1977.
Wow.
The peptide was actually discovered by Dr. Lauren Picart in 1973, just a year after I graduated from high school.
Oh, let's see, was I born? No, kidding,
I was going to ask if you were born yet. Yeah.
Yeah, I was maybe two, maybe.
Yeah, shut up. So the book is based on the science, but I tried to put it together where just anybody can read it. You don't have to be a scientist or a biologist.
And you did a good job at that, because I've read it. I've reread it several parts twice. And it's very – there are a couple little sections that are like, oh, what's that word
mean? Yeah, when talking
about
genes and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But for the most part, like anybody off the streets can read it and understand exactly what it does. So the world appreciates you for breaking that all down to us, and we don't have to be a doctor to understand it.
Yeah, and I was motivated to write the book after the success that I had, the huge shifts I had in my own heart health.
And you're going to share that with us,
I am
going to
share that.
Okay, good.
So I, first of all, I didn't know I had a right bundle branch block when I started elevating my GHK. I would never have known, and it would have gone away without any knowledge that it was there before, had I not had a stress echocardiogram done. I had a knee replacement surgery come up, and I had some funky things happening with my heart. So we did a stress echo, and we found out that I had that. Now, over a period of about a year and a half, I was doing the elevation of my GHK copper peptide every day, every day, every day. One of the things that is known in the literature about that peptide is that it actually turns on the gene that signals our body to make more of our own stem cells.
Mm.
So this is a huge thing. If you can do that on a daily basis, obviously stem cells are, I call them cells that haven't decided what they want to be when they grow up. So they...
Oh, kind of like you, Dr. Harmon.
I'm sure there's
say
more.
That with all funniness, because you are someone who absolutely knows how to make me belly laugh. You and your stories, so.
Well, stories and my impersonations.
Impersonations, yeah. Your voice impersonations, for sure.
Some of the voices get you. Where were we? So we, I didn't know I had this right bundle branch block. That surgery. I had the funny heart palpitations. I had a hard time walking up a hill that's in the foothills behind our neighborhood. Felt like my heart was pounding out of my chest. And I used to be a long distance runner. So it was very odd to me that something was going on, because I've always been the one who could run 10 miles.
And you're not even running. You're walking up a hill.
I'm walking uphill. And so it was disturbing. And there were other warning signs too, like when I was writing chart notes in my practice. There were two different times where everything just went black. Luckily, I was sitting down, but there were those two incidents that I had that, and when I would stand up from bending over to tie my shoes or something, I would get lightheaded. So when I found that out, it was kind of disturbing when I looked on PubMed, and it said, if you have a right bundle branch block, all-cause mortality goes up. So all forms of death go up if there's a right bundle branch block present. So concerning, obviously.
A little bit, yeah. How does one get that out of their mind, right? Especially when, like, all these things are happening.
Right. So off I went. I'm elevating my own peptide every day in my blood. And a year and a half later, had another stress echo done, and the report came back, right bundle branch block no longer present. Now, can I say 100% that it was from doing that? Not 100, because, you know, there are certainly other things going on in my life. I look at it totally objectively. that because two different doctors have said they've never seen one go away, it means more, and they wouldn't know how to make one go away. Right. And so here I've been elevating that peptide every day, every day, every day. So I'm going to talk like an attorney. It's more likely than not as a result of what I was doing. I'm just glad that it happened. My wife, my kids, my grandkids, to have, you know,
that's
husband,
huge.
Dad, grandpa around a lot longer. But not only that, staying productive as we age, you know, I state in the book, aging doesn't have to be this slow decline into frailty and disability. You can have vitality and vigor longer in your life and remain productive and vital, and rather than, you know, well, I don't have enough energy, and so I just can't, you know, make my own lunch or whatever it is. I don't believe that. And I put together a PowerPoint presentation that I've given different places about the top reasons we age faster and die younger. Every single one of those is affected beneficially by elevating your GHK in the literature.
So that explains why you titled your book the way that you titled it.
Right.
So not only is there a possibility, right? Like we... lawyer terms, whatever, you know, that your
more
right bundle branch block went away, or that all of my issues after 13 years went away. Like, what did I do differently? Nothing, other than elevating my own copper peptide every day.
Mm-hmm.
So now the book is called How to Reverse Aging. So not only can it do all these other amazing things, and now it can actually reverse our own age, and we don't have to go into that frailty of the old traditional aging process, right? Like, I think that's kind of how we were designed, was to kind of just go into that frailty of aging and then we die. And it's nice to know that that doesn't have to happen.
I think we were designed to have, you know, vitality and vigor. It's just there's so many things in our world now that we take a hit.
Not like it used to be, right? Not like it used to be when you were a kid, right?
You know, 800 years ago when I was
things
a kid,
were much different.
You
know,
the environment
wasn't so toxic. Our food, you know, you guys grew a lot of your own food. And, you know, it's another world that we live in now. So many things are working against us.
You look at the things that we have in our food nowadays. Well, and the things that they are packaging as food that really isn't food, you know, the GMOs and all of those things, our bodies take a hit eating those types of things.
Yeah, don't get me started on food.
Yeah.
That could be a whole
another
show.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, so I could talk about buying organic berries and soaking them in the sink only to find parasites come out of them. Like, really, this is not okay, right? And people think that we don't have parasites. So, yeah, definitely a whole nother show, right?
Yes, it is. All about food.
It's scary. It's sad. It's scary. But,
and I start out the presentation that I did asking, posing questions to people. You know, think about when we are old in age, what will that look like? Set some goals, you know? Will I even remember who I am? Will I be meeting a new person in my house every 15 minutes? Will I be able to travel? Will my joints work without pain? A lot of times you don't plan that out. You know, what's it going to look like when I'm older? Some of my goals are, I want to remember who I am. I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to move about and not be homebound. not hooked up to machines. The reason I pose all of those questions is because that peptide plays an important role in every single one of those and more, as shown in the from the 91 references in the book about specific research that's been done on those different things. So a person has, you know, you can look it up. It's not something I made up. It's not my
opinion.
It's
not new research. It's not, yeah.
It's been around a long time, but kind of difficult to get. You know, we didn't study it in school.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I think a lot of people are afraid and they're like, I'm not sure I want to, you know, live to be 70. Because like you said, like we want our mind, we think all that just has to go. And we don't all want 100 first dates with our wife that we've been married
maybe
to 50, forever, right?
50?
Oh, did I get the movie wrong? Is it 50 first dates, 100 first dates, or whatever?
It's 50.
But yeah, and so it's a scary thought to get older. And, you know, especially like me being my age, I watched my parents, my friends' parents, were kind of going through that process right now. And it's scary and it's sad. And if there is some type of a tool out there that we can change this, like, yeah, I wish it would have come out sooner, which it obviously did, right? But none of us talked about it. So,
right.
Yeah. So now we're shedding some light on it.
It was the dermatology field that caught on first. So they used it as for the beauty in the beauty industry for skin and hair because of its effect on decreasing wrinkle depth and smoothing skin and helping regrow hair. It actually, the hair follicles actually get thicker as a result of that GHK copper peptide.
Wow.
So people, you know, using it, they'll, wow, my hair is getting so thick. Well, there's a reason. You get more follicles and it increases the shaft diameter of your actual hair strands.
Well, I know personally, knowing you for the amount of time I have, you continuously look younger and younger.
As
and
do you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'll take it all day long, right?
Absolutely.
But no, it's definitely is something that we need to talk about. So how can this peptide help those with Lyme disease or really any type of a chronic illness, right? Obviously, we're talking Lyme disease because that's what this podcast is all about. But so many things that, and I think I've said in the past, you know, like, do I call this like a Lyme soup, Lyme umbrella? Because it's not just Lyme. It's so many other things and so many chronic illnesses.
Right.
Kind of stem from the same thing and have a lot of the same similarities as Lyme disease does. So
a big part of that, Tanya, is it's how it activates the immune system.
Mm.
We have our Marines that need to go out and kill stuff. And it activates that part of the immune system. Plus of its... it helps relieve oxidative stress. When we get exposed to viruses or bacteria or just stress in general, it's oxidative stress. Well, it's that peptide that helps undo that oxidative stress. We all have things happen to us. You know, nobody gets through life without taking a hit in some way. Emotional stress, physical harm, you know, we get illnesses. It's not the fact that we are going to get them. It's what happens. How does our body handle it when we're down in those lows, in those dips? Do we get back to what we were before at that level? Or are we just kind of under-functioning now?
Right.
And then we get hit again. Then we get hit again. And now we're in that pre-frailty area. So it's... there are so many things about that peptide, from if it's in high levels in your body, for example, and then you get a head injury. They've shown in the literature that it greatly decreases neuron death when you have a subdural hematoma. A lot of M's and R's in there. Subdural hematoma. So if you have a brain bleed, normally a lot of neurons in the brain will die. Well, if you have a high concentration of that GHK, you get far less neuron death in an injury. Now, that doesn't apply to Lyme, but just the general health of the brain fog of Lyme.
Which we need help right? with our brains. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so
there's much of Lyme, and I've seen it time and time again, we actually get diagnosed with, you know, early onset Alzheimer's or dementia or, you know, and you've got people that are in their 20s and 30s being told this because it really does feel like it. It's very scary. Here our bodies are, you know, failing us. And then, I mean, I was in my 30s and I didn't know my name. Like, how does a name is not something you just forget,
that
right?
Must have been terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I might forget your name or somebody else's name or certain things, but you don't forget your own name.
Wow.
You know, so you either got these doctors telling you that you've got early onset Alzheimer's or dementia, like this is what it is, that, or you have these doctors telling you that it's all in your head. And go see a psychiatrist, you know, either one, neither one of them are anything that you want to hear.
No.
So we definitely have, I mean, Lyme just poses so many different issues throughout the whole entire body. But yeah, brain function for one is really good.
Well, let's talk about that. Our brain has to have copper in order to make neurons, synapses, and neurotransmitters. All you know, that's the brain. Those are
And this is kind of your specialty,
this is how
too,
it works.
Right?
So it has to have that in order to make those things. It is the GHK copper peptide that transports, holds on to it, and gets it through the blood-brain barrier into the brain where it's needed. So it starts the whole process of being able to even make those things. And another substance called BDNF, that stands for brain-derived neurotrophic factor. You don't have to remember that. We'll just call it BDNF, but that's the stuff your brain makes when you're doing new tasks. And it signals the building of new neurons because you're doing something new. This is what neuroplasticity is all about. Being able to make new pathways so that you can A, do something better, or B, do a new task. That's why it takes a while to learn something. You're building those new neurons and those new connections. Mm. So when you look at that brain fog, and there's a whole chapter in there about neuroregeneration, so regenerating neurons that are lost. The average person loses 9,000 neurons a day because they're old and they die.
Hopefully we have 9,000. A whole lot, because that's a lot.
Well, we do, and we only replace somewhere between 2,500 and 4,500 of those 9,000. Unless you're doing things to slow down the death and increase the regeneration of them. So that's where the GHK comes in. It helps with that regeneration of those neurons that have been lost.
Which is very important, because that was one of the things I struggled with when I got into remission, was the brain fog. You know, some of the simple words that you just can't think of, or how to spell a basic word, you know, and it wasn't all the time, but it was enough that speaking to somebody that I didn't know, like, I didn't really come across as all that intelligent, right? Like, who is this person? And so I think that once we get our bodies into remission, there can still be some time for things to continue to improve and fix themselves, because we were sick for so long. So if we have a tool that we can utilize to speed that up, all the better, right?
Oh, yes. And I've actually incorporated their use into my protocols at my, call it the bricks and mortar. I don't make bricks and mortar. It's my my building, my practice, Clear Mind Idaho.
And that's why I said this is your specialty, because you're all about the brain.
Yeah. And some of your listeners may have something that could be helped with the things that we do there, because the brain gets so dysregulated because of the Lyme. And we do have people who come into us for that as well. But the elevation of the copper peptide is important for several different reasons. There was a study done that showed that people had better brain regulation over a 6-week period of time using that, elevating their copper peptide.
Wow. That's crazy. So brain, okay. So we talked about immunity. We talked about brain. What about like our gut health, our mitochondria? I know we've talked about what it does to our oxygen. Does it help with our air that we breathe? I know that mostly with Babesia, with Lyme, is where we get air hunger, and we literally struggle to breathe. And so with this, we get diagnosed with sleep apnea, right?
Oh,
I'm the first case. Not the first case. I'm the perfect case, because that's exactly what happened to me. They're trying to tell me I have sleep apnea because I can't breathe. Well, no, I can't breathe because I have Babesia, but nobody knows this, right? So the list goes on and on and on of the things that we go through to and get told.
No wonder people are so puzzled.
Yeah.
In their journey, trying to find out what's wrong with me.
Yeah, it's horrible. We get to a point where we don't know what to believe. We don't know who to trust. Yeah. We don't know what treatment protocol to do. We don't know what to buy. We don't, you know, and then you just got, you know, a lot of, and I don't want to call them bad doctors, right? Like I'm not even sure that that's a fair term to use, because these doctors, they go through these years of medical school, right? And what is there, like a chapter maybe on nutrition? A chapter.
4 hours.
Of like 9 years of schooling or whatever it is. And so we can't judge them based on the tools that they have in their toolbox, right?
Right.
That's one thing. But then you have doctors that, because they don't know what's wrong with you, instead of, you know, sending you down the rabbit hole, let's send you to a rheumatologist, a neurologist, you know, go ahead and send us to all these places. Instead, they tell us that we're crazy. Those are the doctors that I'm going to judge, right? Like, that's not okay to be gaslit.
I don't know what
like
you
that.
Have, so therefore you must be crazy.
Yes, yes. Instead of just pawning us off on some other type of specialist that is probably also going to be a waste of our time, but at least they're trying to pawn us off on
something. So are you saying that they send people to psychiatrists?
They absolutely do. And in fact, I have
malingering.
A recent friend who just got told by her rheumatologist literally last week, because she called me in tears. She has Lyme. She has a positive Lyme test. And the doctor told her that she does not have Lyme and that she'll never get better unless she goes to a psychiatrist. And it's not shocking to hear that, because that's what I heard starting way back in 2008. But of all the years that have passed, like, things should have changed some, right? Like, I expect that in 2008, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, but not now, not 2024, after all these years. Like, that's not okay.
Tanya, when I was young, there were many doctors that didn't believe that PMS existed.
Oh, I bet that was a, not sure I could use the words for it, but.
Yeah, so.
You know, think we were already a little cranky?
It takes a long time for things to get into medical books. And so they don't have the education on that unless they're going to a lot of conferences and seminars and continuing ed courses outside of the box and outside of the medical model.
Yeah.
They don't find out about it.
Yeah.
Which is tragic.
Yeah, they do. But, and again, it's one thing to pawn us off on another doctor.
Absolutely.
Versus another thing to just flat out tell us that we're crazy. Mm-hmm. But that's where I draw the line with a good doctor, bad doctor, right? Like I can't judge them all for, like you said, for not having the tools in their toolbox and not learning the things that it probably takes years for things to get out there. But anyways, yeah, that in itself could be another episode too.
Absolutely.
We could probably break Lyme out into a million episodes on their own, right? So just crazy. So much to go on. But this peptide is, it really can be a huge thing in the Lyme community for sure.
And you asked some questions, mitochondria, you know, oxygen transport. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that's very important as we age, mitochondrial function. You know, you see elderly people, they start to lose a little muscle mass because they're not exercising. Well, they're not exercising because they don't have enough energy, and they don't have enough energy to make their own lunch, so they eat less. And now they have less of an appetite, and then it's a downward spiral. The GHK influences an enzyme in one of the final stages of making ATP or energy in the mitochondria. So it helps maintain that mitochondrial function so that we have enough energy to do what we need to do. It's also important in the transport of oxygen around the body. So there's that. So you know, you have better oxygenation, you have more energy to do work. Therefore, you have the, if your cells don't have enough energy, they can't detox. So they start to store stuff. I can't get rid of this. I don't have enough energy to run the machine to detox my body of all of this stuff. So where does it go? It gets stored in our fat and the liver and other places. So there's that part about energy and oxygenation.
Sorry to interrupt. So when we talk about fatigue that we deal with Lyme, does that in some level have something to do with the oxygen in our body?
Of course.
Because when you just said, you know, when you get older and you don't have the energy to make a lot of food, so you don't eat a lot of food, like we do very little stuff when we're sick with Lyme, right? And not to downplay COVID or what they talk about COVID, but I know a lot of people who, when they got sick with that, the description of fatigue was not a normal fatigue, right? And I can tell you firsthand, I got COVID and I had severe fatigue from it. Mm-hmm. But it was still, it did not even compare.
Is that right?
To the type of fatigue you have with Lyme.
Wow.
And I mean, I've had people on the show in the past and some people have said, you know, it literally feels like their feet and their hands, their whole body is in like 50 pounds of cement. They're just trying to carry it around. And that was kind of a good description of it. It's a whole nother level of fatigue that I don't think you could ever accurately describe it to somebody who's never had Lyme.
No.
And that's one of our huge things, because I truly think that treating Lyme is almost like a full-time job. Right? Like there's so much you have to do. You have to have good nutrition. You have to eat. You have to stay strong. You have to take your supplements. You know, like every 4 hours, you have to detox your body. Like there's just so much that it's like a full-time job. And when we're so fatigued, I actually had a lady tell me she was so fatigued, she would lay in bed. She was bedridden. And she literally just told herself all day long, just breathe in and breathe out. She had to remind herself to breathe. She said her body was so fatigued, she thinks if she didn't tell herself that, she wouldn't breathe.
Wow.
And I mean, I can resonate with that so well. It's crazy. So you're telling us by elevating this peptide, it can increase our cellular energy, which in turn can improve our fatigue. That could be a game changer for so many people. Yeah, if you're tired, you can't do anything, right?
Right. And if you can't do anything, now you have muscle atrophy.
Yeah.
Now you're more frail.
Yeah. And we already have, you know, most of us already have this all over body pain. So, wow, that could be huge. Yeah.
So there are different categories of goodness with the GHK. The goodness of, you know, helping our brains be better. The goodness of helping our heart be better.
Yes.
Speaking about cardiovascular health, you know, you have stroke and you have MI, myocardial infarction. Mm-hmm. Number one predictor of stroke is an increased fibrinogen level. Fibrinogen, don't get confused by that. That's just the stuff that makes our red blood cells stick together a little bit. It makes them a little sticky so that if we get a cut, we are able to clot and stop the bleeding. If you don't have any, you'll just bleed out. And this is what you're clotting. It's really complex with the clotting factors and everything, but high fibrinogen levels and number one predictor, and your chances of having a stroke, if it gets too elevated, you're 2.5 times more likely to have a stroke. That GHK copper peptide inhibits a gene that's responsible for making part of that fibrinogen molecule so that it prevents it from getting elevated, so lowers the risk of stroke. I've actually spoken to people. Now, I'm not making any claims here. And
of course not. Where's the attorney?
Someone's experience may be different, but they actually had to adjust their blood thinner medication because they didn't need it as much when they were doing that. So that's one of the big benefits for cardiovascular health. And we cannot go much farther without talking about, I would say, the biggest benefit from that peptide is that it actually turns on the genes that tell your body to make more of your own stem cells.
Mm. And I will say this. So we're on a Lyme podcast, right? So many people in the Lyme world are very familiar with stem cells because
They go down to Mexico and they go and get
stem cell treatments. Mm-hmm. And I've heard great results and I've heard epic fails. And that it kind of goes along with any type of treatment you do in the Lyme world. Not everything works for the same people, right?
Well, and there's
you can explain to us the different, how that is different, right? How is it different from getting a stem cell injection over in, which you can't even do here anymore, right?
Right.
Go to Mexico or wherever, versus having our own stem cells stay active.
Part of the problem with doing stem cell injections. Stem cells are attracted to inflammation like a moth to a light. You know, I'm a moth. I walk towards the light, fly towards the light. Excuse me. But if the inflammation is too great, it's like a moth to a flame and the stem cells die. So.
Well, let me just stop you right there. So that's a huge problem with Lyme people, right?
Exactly. That's what I'm talking
about. Our inflammation markers are off the charts.
So you have a situation where the doctor can't give you anti-inflammatories to reduce the inflammation because corticosteroid anti-inflammatories are anti-regeneration. So they will actually inhibit the function of the stem cells. So you can't get corticosteroid injections in your knee before they give you a stem cell injection in your knee because that will also kill the stem cells. So it's a crapshoot whether or not those 50 billion stem cells you just got die or live. And that's why they have to tell you these might not work. It depends on your body's response and the amount of inflammation that you have. Now, excuse me, if you are elevating your GHK every day, you're getting your own stem cells every day, your own stem cells every day, your own, and on and on, rather than getting one big injection, mass infusion of stem cells. If I'm too inflamed that day, they might not make it.
Might not work. And right. How much money, right? And right. And I will tell you this. So I didn't track a lot of things once I started elevating my own peptide. But I do know that the first 4 days, I lost 7 pounds.
Wow.
And it was pure inflammation. I mean, I still have pictures of my feet where my ankles were like balloons. That was the most visual inflammation that I had. And, I mean, I actually have ankle bones now. Like, it's kind of crazy because I haven't had them for like 13 years.
What a concept.
Right? So, you know, if obviously this peptide is helping our bodies to reduce inflammation as well.
Oh, very much so.
And so if we can do that and then, you know, keep building our stem cells, like that's a win-win. That's almost a guarantee, right? That our stem cells are going to work versus an injection where they may or may not work depending on how inflamed you are that day.
Because you only have them for a little while.
Yes, exactly.
Correct.
Exactly. Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. And I want to go back to just a little bit ago when we were talking about our energy and fatigue. And you said something interesting to me that I did not know. So when your body is low on this cellular energy, I didn't realize that we have a harder time detoxing. So how is that, or why is that?
Well, you look at it like this. In order to do work, to do something, it costs energy. The detox process is no different.
Okay.
If I'm going to clean my car, I have to put a lot of energy into that. It takes energy if I take it to the car wash. Well, the energy is the electricity that runs the brushes and the pumps and the water sprayers and all of that stuff. So it costs energy in order to get things out of the cell, that mechanism, getting it out of the cell and out through the kidneys, through the liver, through the skin, all costs energy. And if I don't have it, I can't do that. Therefore, I have to do something with it. I'm going to retain it. I'm going to swell up, or I'm going to store it. I have to store it somewhere if I can't get rid of it. So the body becomes a toxic waste dump rather than, hey, there's a reason why we have kidneys, we have bowel. We get rid of stuff that's toxic to us. Now, on going a little bit deeper on that, we have genomic instability. Because we can have genomic instability, meaning our genes can get damaged, if we can't get rid of the stuff that's harmful to us. Stuff that's harmful to us, if it builds up, those are things that we get rid of through the kidneys and the bowel. We got what we needed. Now we're getting rid of what we don't need that is toxic. So if we can't detox, those things build up in the cell. That damages, that can damage and cause mutations in our genes, that cell will die. Other things that cause that would be radiation. You talk about genomic instability, you have radiation, it damages the gene, that cell dies. Or it mutates into cancer. So if you look at cancer prevention, no claims are made. When you think about being able to not only protect our genes, but repair the genes, because that's what it's known to do as well. It repairs 4,200 of our genes. So we are all subjected to things like radiation, toxins, But if you have enough of that GHK, it can help repair those genes and reverse the damage. It's known actually to reverse the damage caused by sunlight as well. So there's that gene protection.
This is huge. Huge. So outside of Lyme, just in general, we touched on this a little bit early on. We're just full of toxins, right? Like we live in a toxic environment.
We do.
So not just our food, but people, you know, the shampoos, the lotions, the cleaners in your home. I mean, just everything, right? So us that battle Lyme disease, we're constantly trying to detox our body because I tell people that if you're doing a killing regimen, right, and you're killing these spirochetes,
gotta go somewhere.
This bacteria, it's got to come out of you.
Yeah.
So I tell them you got to bind it and get it out of you.
And that's often lost when discussing something with a practitioner. The fact that you have to have extra energy to get rid of it once you kill it. And they talk about binders and things, but those are things that will kind of vacuum up the stuff, but you still have to get rid of it.
You still have to get rid of that
that's bound to the spirochete debris.
Yes, so we're already having a hard time just detoxing out just the world, right? Now we got to detox out all these things that we're killing inside of us because we've got to kill it to get rid of it.
Right.
So
it's a bloody nightmare.
And a lot of us, right? It's a vicious cycle. So a lot of us, as we go through our Lyme journey, most of the time leading up to getting a diagnosis, right? Like for me, that was 7 years. And I did test I could imagine. I went to every specialist. I did all this. So along this 7 years, I discovered I had this MTHFR mutation. Which, and I don't know a lot about both of them because there's two types of them. I only had one of them. And the one that I had was my body doesn't detox well and it doesn't know how to methylate. So you throw that into the whole mix of trying to detox through your Lyme journey and it makes it hard, right? And so many of us have this mutation that you wouldn't know unless you're checking for things. So a lot of people don't even know that they're walking around with this gene, right? Right. Well, I do know because I did get tested for it. And also what I do know is that you talked earlier about how elevating your copper peptide resets your genes. Well, it does. And where's my attorney? May or may not be, right? All I know is that I no longer have MTHFR mutation.
That's incredible.
It is gone, and that was confirmed last year by a DNA blood test that I did. And I didn't even do this test to check for the mutation. Like, why? It didn't matter. I have it. It is what it is. And I'm reading along this report that was like, oh, my God, thousands of pages. And it said mutation, none found, none. And I'm like, what? Huh? What? And I'm trying to think of, like, what could possibly have done that? Of course, we don't know for sure, right? But
no.
Going to assume that it had everything to do with elevating my copper peptide.
Well, the chances of it mutating back to normal are quite slim. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
There has to be some reason.
Isn't that crazy? And that's
I would have that
big.
Test run again to make sure it wasn't, you know, false negative.
Can a blood test lie? Hold, please.
I've not heard of a DNA test
lying, right? No, a blood test can lie. The listeners are out there going, Tanya, who are you? And you know that the blood tests lie because 90% of Lyme blood tests lie, yeah. Right? They're false negative. Yeah. So no, blood tests can definitely lie, right? But so yeah,
that would be interesting to do that.
To do it again,
I would encourage you to do that because that's a huge thing. And to be certain that it's not a false, blood test.
I'll do. Okay, so
it might be a little spendy, but
can you do a blood test for it, or does it have to be another, like a specific, like this DNA test that I did?
you would be doing a DNA test.
Okay.
There are several different companies that do those.
I'll do it again because I'll tell you what, like I was pretty mind blown.
Yeah, that is mind blowing.
I was pretty mind blown. The other thing I was mind blown about was during my Lyme journey, I was on many, many opioids. I never did do antibiotics. I treated all holistically, but I did many pain meds and anxiety meds and antidepressants and, you know, just all the stuff because it was all in my head for a lot of years, right? And so I ended up with a not so great functioning liver, fatty liver, you know, just issues. And I recently, this past fall, got told that I had a liver of that of somebody in their 20s.
Wow.
So how do I explain that one? And should I retest that test?
It doesn't hurt to have it
again. Right?
That's incredible.
Yeah. For the record, I'm 52.
And
I have a liver of a 20-year-old.
That's age reversal.
At its finest, which is exactly what your book says that this GHK copper peptide does, is it reverses our aging. And part of the aging is our organs aging, right? So let's turn back the clock on our organs.
So you reduce oxidative stress and repair the damage done by oxidative stress. And it signals your body to make more of your own stem cells for regeneration. It also helps repair the telomeres at the end of our genes. For those of you who don't know, the length of your life is determined, the life of a cell is determined by the length of the telomere. That is comparable to the little plastic cap on the end of your shoelace.
Okay.
And it holds the chromosomes together. They come apart each time a cell divides. So there's kind of a throwaway part that was planned into the mix that since we lose a little bit of length every time a cell divides, well, the length comes off of the throwaway part that's not part of the actual genetic information. So it gets a little shorter with each cellular division, a little shorter, a little shorter. Once it's so short that they can't come back together and be held together by the telomeres, that cell dies. So the GHK assists in the rebuilding of the length of that telomere. So if you can increase the number of times a cell can divide, it therefore lives longer. So you're not constantly trying to replace as many of those cells because they're living longer. Now you can devote resources to doing other things.
Other things. Wow. Fascinating.
It is.
Fascinating.
There's a lot. There is a lot. It's incredible. That's why I wrote the book, because there's so much. You just can't sit down in one conversation and tell people about all of the things that it affects in our body.
Right.
That's why there's 18 chapters. Three of them are actually about the brain, though.
Well, I would expect nothing less, right?
The effects on the brain are vast.
Wow. And we all need brain health. You know, I went through many years of having Lyme brain, right? And we laugh about it. My family, my friends, we laugh about it. Oh, Tanya said, she was just having Lyme brain that day. And I worked hard for that title, right? It was hard to get that. And so I still use it. I'm like, it's Lyme brain, when really it's probably just old age, right? So, yeah, if I can.
By the way, Tanya, you're not old. You're getting younger.
I'm getting younger by the day, right? Well, it's pretty incredible to, I got sick in 08. And I think I was like in my late 30s, I guess. I don't know. Somewhere in there. And I truly feel like I did in my 20s. I feel as good now, today, after 13 years of Lyme disease.
That's fantastic.
Than I did when I was in my 20s. And I am as active at the gym every week as I was when I was in my 20s. And that may not sound amazing to just a person off the street, but to somebody who's battled Lyme disease themselves, to know what I've gone through for 13 years, to truly be able to say, I have my life back, and I don't worry about running my body into the ground or overdoing things, or because I feel amazing. I take care of myself. I eat good. I exercise. You know, I do all the things I'm supposed to do, including elevating that peptide every day. But, you know, a lot of people that beat Lyme disease, they worry a lot about keeping their energy and not overdoing it and not getting sick again. And I get it. You can have a little bit of PTSD from it for sure. But I bet there are people listening
who feel like they are in such a deep, dark hole that they can't get out.
Oh, yeah. There are. That is the whole reason I do this podcast. Yeah. And do what I do out there in the Lyme community is because there's somebody out there that either feels alone, feels defeated, they don't have a Lyme disease other than they just think they're crazy because that's what their doctors tell them. When I was at that point in my life, which was about 4 years into trying to get a diagnosis, you know me, Dr. Harmon, and for the first few years, I was still at the tail end of my treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a pretty positive person. I'm a pretty outgoing person, right?
Yes,
I like to talk just a little bit, maybe, right?
Maybe a little.
I bring a lot of bubbly. I bring a lot of energy.
I don't know. You and my wife together, that's some talking going on right there.
And to actually say that I contemplated suicide it still blows my mind some days because I always thought those people were just such cowards that did it, right? And it's a real thing. I thought, if nothing's wrong with me and I feel like this,
I don't want to go on.
I can't get better because nothing's wrong with me. If I can't get better, I'm not going to do this.
But you give people hope with what you're doing.
That's why I do it. Yep. Because there's some listener out there
every
day that hears and takes away just one thing that they needed to. Mm-hmm. I recently got a message that somebody had given up on treatment. Not given up on life, but they gave up on treating because they're just done.
It's tired.
They're not seeing the needle move or anything. And they heard one of my episodes and some guests that I had on that had an incredible success journey. And this person reached out and sent a message and said, because of your podcast, I'm going to start treating again and getting my life back.
Doesn't that just
like,
give
I
you
mean,
the,
well, yeah.
The feels.
Yeah. it's why I do this every week, because we get so desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you have family and friends that support you or not, it's a very isolating disease. We feel alone all the time.
Because
a lot of times we can't hear people talk. We can't have a TV on. It's too much stimulation for our brain.
Well, and I bet a lot of times they aren't believed anyway.
No.
When all of the things are going on. How could you have that many things going on?
Yeah. Well, and then one day it's one thing. And the next day, that one thing feels fine. It's something else. So now it's like this, you're this picture perfect of a hypochondriac.
So now you have hip pain?
Yeah. Yesterday, your hips were fine. Yeah. But today they're not.
Today you have diarrhea?
There's no explanation other than Lyme disease. So if you are a listener out there and you don't have a Lyme diagnosis and you're trying to figure out what's wrong with you, like if you have all these mystery things, right, that kind of falls into this Lyme soup thing that I talk about. And if you want to get tested for Lyme accurately, I say it all the time. There's two labs out there that I trust. There's a lot of good ones, but two that I fully 100% trust, Armin Labs in Augsburg, Germany, and Igenix Labs in Palo Alto, California. If you want to go outside of a blood test, find a practitioner that does muscle testing, because that's pretty incredible in itself too. And that's one of my favorite forms. But any of those three options, and let's figure out if you really have Lyme disease and get you better, because obviously there's hope.
And that's the first step, obviously.
Yes, yes, for sure. Well, this has been incredible. I'm super excited because I always learn something new when I talk to you. You're fascinating to fill my memory bank with, right? Fill my toolbox with is what I'm going to call it, right?
We need
tools in that toolbox.
And the cool thing is that you, once again, have a toolbox.
And once again, have a brain that remembers things.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm super excited.
Oh, that's great. It's been fun. It's always great talking to you.
Always fun. So much. I'm so glad that you're going to be around longer for 24, 28, 26. How many grandkids?
We just had our 27th
a week ago.
Mother's Day is when it was.
Oh.
Yeah, my stepson posted on Facebook, and he said, I don't want to rub it in or anything, but I gave my wife a new baby for Mother's Day.
Wow, I love it. That's awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I knew there was a recent one, didn't know it was Mother's Day. So what a special day to have that.
I'm at the stage right now. I've told my grandkids, anybody who can beat me in chess, $100. And now I'm scrambling to keep my skills up so that I don't lose too much money.
Well, don't forget to elevate that copper peptide, and I think you'll be fine.
I've wanted to incentivize them to develop that noggin up there.
Right, right. Well, yeah. So between your right bundle branch block heart thing that went away, all my issues that went away, it's definitely something to look into. So
definitely a different course to your life and to my life because of that. And then that gives me a deep gratitude and a desire to educate other people on that.
To want to share, for sure. So yeah, so the listeners out there, you want more information, look at the title of this and reach out. I'm happy to share with you. So thank you so much, Dr. John Harmon.
Thanks for having me.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. If you would like to help me get your voice heard and spread this podcast, please go to the Patreon link in the description, and any donation is welcome, just simply to help cover the studio costs.